Martin Luther King Day on the Brian Lehrer Show. The mayor of Hoboken meets the U.S. attorney to accuse Chris Christie of corruption. A tale of two campaign promises. De Blasio keeps the one on paid sick leave, but on saving Brooklyn hospitals, it's complicated. And we will replay excerpts from our Martin Luther King celebration yesterday at the Apollo Theater.
The folk I knew, they were out there engaged in social activism. They knew that you could love, and because of that love, you could work for the benefit of others.
Many of us still are.
Yes, absolutely.
More excerpts coming up. First, the mayor of Hoboken makes the most serious charge against Governor Christie yet, that the lieutenant governor threatened Hoboken with political payback specifically on Christie's behalf.
And she said that she had been with him on Friday night and that this was a direct message from the governor.
Hoboken Mayor Dawn Zimmer on CNN State of the Union yesterday. The alleged demand, support a Hoboken development project connected to a Christie appointee, or Hoboken loses Sandy aid.
You know, when you look at their response, they did not respond to the number one question. Are they linking Hoboken Sandy funding to the Rockefeller project? The fact is, they are.
The Christie people say Zimmer is lying. Zimmer says, put the lieutenant governor under oath.
And I believe if and when she is asked to testify under oath, the truth will come out, because I believe she will be truthful and she will tell the truth.
She said, he said. We'll see if it gets proven either way. We'll discuss what's new about Bridgegate, Benghazi, and the NSA with Washington Post national political correspondent Karen Tumulty. Hi, Karen. Happy Martin Luther King Day, and welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks a lot, and same to you.
So for people who took a news holiday over the weekend, Hoboken Mayor Dawn Zimmer, who we just heard in those clips, released pages from a journal in which she says she described this alleged incident back last summer in writing when she says this happened, documentary evidence. And I don't know if the timeline or the alleged threats or even the journal entry can be verified, but if they are, I think this is the most serious threat to Christie's career yet, because it involves he himself allegedly ordering a corrupt act. Is any of this drip, drip, drip having national repercussions for Christie yet?
Well, I think it certainly seems to be heightening the stakes around what, you know, a lot of people were sort of dismissing as a traffic problem. You know, there are a lot of questions about this. The mayor claims that the lieutenant governor, Kim Guadagno, had directly made this approach to her. The lieutenant governor, within the last few moments, has gone public to deny that and say it is false and illogical.
Part of what the mayor had said was that Guadagno told her that she would deny it if it ever got made public. That doesn't make the whole thing accurate, but it's at least consistent with a little piece of Zimmer's story. But go ahead.
Right. But in addition to her personal journal, the mayor has produced a number of emails that indicate that, you know, that there was some pressure from state officials to proceed with this development project, and that, you know, funds were forthcoming from the Port Authority to facilitate a study of it. And finally, there was a meeting that was offered to be arranged with the chairman of the board of the Port Authority to get it going. Now, what's interesting about him is that his law firm was representing the developer that wanted to develop this problem. It all gets very complicated, but what you see is a sort of web of the same names and figures showing up, and, you know, now I think some economic interests coming to play for the first time, not just political retribution, which is sort of what this story was until then.
And it would be a very old-fashioned kind of New Jersey corruption if true, politicians connected with developers, pressuring other politicians to approve their pal's development project, the pal in this case being a Christie appointee, David Sampson II, to the Port Authority, which is the agency that ordered the George Washington Bridge lane closure. So,
But by the way, it's, you know, then total, in deeper context of this, you know, it was because of a deal like this that the mayor of Hoboken's predecessor went to jail.
And this is exactly what Zimmer apparently wrote in her journal she was so disappointed in Christie Ford that this was the same kind of old-fashioned corruption that she had fought for 4 years, and she thought Christie was cut from a different cloth. Again, if true, if true, if true. But folks, if you didn't pay attention to the news over the weekend, this is where this is now headed. So Chris Christie was in Florida to raise money for Governor Rick Scott's reelection campaign down there. How'd that go?
It was certainly a distraction, but the fact is that Chris Christie remains, I think, a very viable candidate for the Republican nomination in 2016, should he seek it. And he is getting a lot of defense, not only from the Republican establishment, people like Haley Barbour, the former governor of Mississippi, but for the first time, he's getting some defense from the sort of right-wing elements in the conservative movement that in the past have been hostile to him. Rush Limbaugh is suddenly on the air calling for people to rally around Chris Christie.
The enemy of my enemy.
Right, exactly.
And the latest on Mayor Zimmer is that she met with the U.S. Attorney's Office in Newark for hours yesterday, according to the report that I heard, and turned over that journal that she says is evidence of Christie corruption from, this was before the George Washington Bridge lane closures. So that becomes another possible landmine for the governor on these Hoboken allegations. The U.S. attorney for New Jersey, his own old job during the Bush administration, a federal prosecutor, now an Obama appointee, who can look into this independently.
And this is on top of two legislative investigations, both of which have subpoena power and appear to be using it quite broadly.
And I see the Washington Post, your paper, has a story today about an early Christie campaign for a seat on the Morris County Town Board, which he won back in 1994. But then he was successfully sued for defamation and defeated for reelection after it was revealed that a campaign commercial he was running accusing his opponents of being under investigation was false. There was no investigation. That article is by your colleague, David Fahrenthold. So suddenly, to sit here in New York and ask, well, what's the larger context for this? The Washington, D.C. Post is interested in what happened in Morris County, New Jersey 20 years ago. So I guess just the existence of the story, and it looks like it's on page one on your paper.
It is, yes.
Says there's a narrative building around Christie that's just a little bit different from the one as of a few weeks ago.
That's right. And I think, this is part of it is kind of wrapped up in New Jersey's very distinct politics, distinct being, I guess, a euphemism. But there's also a lot of it is wrapped up in the, longer narrative and national narrative of his potential aspirations to run for president.
And this is the classic pattern of how a scandal narrative progresses, isn't it? Watergate, a two-bit break-in, but then they try to cover it up, and boom, obstruction of justice. President Clinton sued by Paula Jones, Paula who? But then boom, look what we found in discovery, Monica Lewinsky and Chris Christie's Bridgegate, which has plausible deniability about his knowledge of it. But now the mayor of Hoboken feels free to dump her little secret, unproven so far, but if proven, maybe worse than the original Bridgegate story. Sound familiar?
Well, and I was, when I was in Trenton last week reporting on this, the ostensible story that came out at the beginning of this was that this whole closure of these access lanes to this bridge was just a bunch of, Christie's political hacks, seeking retribution on the mayor of Fort Lee for refusing to endorse him some months earlier, his reelection. Well, the more people I talked to in Trenton, Democrats and Republicans would just say, this doesn't quite add up. The endorsement of a part-time mayor 4 or 5 months before just wasn't that big of a deal, for a governor who was cruising to a landslide reelection, that his lieutenants would have wanted to do something this drastic. So even before the mayor of Hoboken came forward, there was a lot of just kind of mystification about what had really happened in Fort Lee.
And as some of our listeners know, Steve Kornacki from Salon and MSNBC has a theory that the Fort Lee George Washington Bridge lane closures were actually related to a development project, again, a development project that is taking place right there. And that's, I think, a little more complicated than the Hoboken one where he just wanted something to go forward. This was going forward.
And there is still no motive there. Right. I talked to people on the city council and people are dealing with that Fort Lee development project. And, you know, they pointed out that there had been many, many hearings, planning hearings, you know, zoning hearings before this, and that, you know, that neither the Port Authority nor the governor's office had really shown much interest in it. I mean, they hadn't testified. They hadn't weighed in on one side or the other.
Karen Tumulty, the famed, legendary national political correspondent for The Washington Post, interviewing members of the Fort Lee City Council. This is what it's come to.
At least the ones who were willing to talk to me.
So I want to move on. But listeners, on tomorrow's show, we will take a close look at the Hoboken development project that Mayor Zimmer is talking about, how it's linked to Christie's Port Authority appointee David Sampson, and why Mayor Zimmer did not give it the green light even after the alleged threat. We will also look into some more of her history of saying positive things about Governor Christie, including at a WNYC event. We'll play that clip. So that'll be on tomorrow's show. But Karen, some of the press is framing this moment as which is worse, Bridgegate or Benghazi. And there is simultaneously a new Senate report on the Benghazi attack that is critical of the State Department, of course, when Hillary Clinton was in charge. Does it criticize her by name for not providing better security?
Comes up only one time in this lengthy report, and that is in the Republican commentary at the end of it, just saying, you know, in one sentence that the ultimate responsibility for this lies with the Secretary of State because she's in charge of this, the government department. But the report overall is quite scathing about the State Department's performance throughout all of this. What it does not do, and in fact what it denies happened, is another one of the Republican talking points, which this report comes out and says there was no conspiracy, however, to cover this up. This was just a complete failure in performance on the part of the State Department, but that there was not the conspiracy to cover it up that we've heard so much about.
Does it harm Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign, in your opinion, or dare I ask it, which is worse, politically speaking, Bridgegate or Benghazi? And I really hate that framing, even though a lot of the press is doing it, because, you know, which is worse, Benghazi? I'm sorry, four people died. But that doesn't mean it's a worse scandal for Clinton, like it's more on her hands than the Christie stuff is on his. So we have to be able to pick apart the politics from the seriousness of the incident.
We also don't know what the bridge scandal is yet. The bridge scandal may turn out to be nothing. You know, so I think it could turn out to be something serious. It could, you know, so I think that right now you can't sort of ask these two things. I think, you know, people will argue when Hillary Clinton runs that, you know, this was a black mark on her tenure as Secretary of State. It will come up. But the question is how people measure this against the rest of her record. And there's also a front page story on the Washington Post today about the effort on the part of former Secretary Clinton's allies now and herself in her upcoming memoir to sort of paint her tenure at the State Department in her own terms. So, again, there are going to be a number of narratives out there, and a lot of things are going to happen between now and 2016. So for us to be sort of weighing an unfolding investigation that we are watching going on right now versus, you know, the Benghazi thing, it's just not a comparison that you can really make.
And listeners, we have time for a few phone calls for Karen Tumulty from The Washington Post on Hoboken or Bridgegate, on the Benghazi report, also on NSA. We'll spend a few minutes on that after the president's speech on Friday. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. So, yeah, that race to define Hillary Clinton's tenure as Secretary of State, her memoir coming out, Republicans countering. I don't yet see any potential Democratic rivals countering. But we had former Defense Secretary Robert Gates on the show last week, and I asked him point blank, from a national security standpoint, do you think Hillary Clinton would make a good president? And he said,
well, let's just say that I have a lot of admiration for Hillary. It's expressed in the book. And with that, though, I would say that the Democrats probably don't need a Republican handicapping their race in 2016.
So, Karen Tumulty, how much weight does that old Republican carry?
Well, you know, again, I think the book will, again, be part of the argument. And Secretary Gates, there is one kind of damaging moment for Secretary Clinton in the book where she and the president are engaged in a conversation where she apparently says that her opposition to the surge was in Iraq was politically motivated. But overall, he expresses quite a bit of admiration for her. The other thing, however, that he indicates in that book, apparently, is that she was on a pretty short leash at the State Department, that, you know, the White House was really running things.
And that's kind of a revelation, isn't it? Because there was the sense, I thought, that Hillary Clinton had a lot of latitude on what to do at the State Department because she just, you know, was so popular and had such a big power base.
But I think she, on some issues, say, you know, she had a lot of running room. But I think on the things that were sort of deemed most central to national security, that stuff has always been run out of the White House.
Now, while we're on national security, how's the reaction to the president's NSA surveillance address, which we carried live on this show on Friday, shaping up in Congress? The civil libertarians I've been speaking with are, I would say, less than underwhelmed. In fact, I would say they consider it a fraud to claim that this changes anything from the civil liberties perspective.
And there is legislation that would that is going forward that is not going to stop, that would essentially, you know, end this collection of bulk data. There's a bill out there by Senator Leahy called the USA Freedom Act, and the president's announcement is not going to stop this from going forward. I think the real question from that speech is how they're going to implement some of the things that they're talking about. For instance, they say now that they want this collection of data to be done by the private sector. Well, the phone companies don't want to do this. So the question is, you know, who is going to do this? And then there's also this question of how, you know, we're not going to be so aggressive about spying on our allies in the future. Again, I think a lot of people are still kind of questioning, what exactly does that mean?
And Brian Lehr Show listeners should know this. Here's something you may want to see. Our producer, Jody Avergan, compiled the list of all the things we know the NSA can do so far, from Snowden documents, from press reports and other sources, like it can set up a fake LinkedIn account, monitor upscale hotel reservations, install fake SIM cards to then control the cell phone, monitor some computers that aren't even connected to the internet, and many other things. To see the full list, go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehr Show. Let's take a phone call, 212-433-WNYC, and Howard in the Bronx. You're on WNYC. Hello, Howard.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Again. So I just wanted to say I was listening to your guest talk about Benghazi, and as I was telling the young woman I spoke to before, do you remember John Kerry and the Swift Boat scandal? I think, in my opinion, the Republicans will use this against Hillary Clinton the way they used it against John Kerry. I think that once Hillary Clinton actually announces that she's running, they will turn this Benghazi business into a bell that will never stop ringing for her entire campaign. And there was an article in the New York Times a few days ago about Christie, and one of the things early in the article it says was that the Republican Party is desperate, they used the word desperate, to find somebody to take over the White House. And based on this, you know, desperation, I think they will use this Benghazi business against her in a very nasty way. Whether or not it will hurt her, actually, remains to be seen, but that's my opinion.
Right. Well, it's part of a record. I don't know if it's exactly the same as Swift Boat. Karen, you remember that from 2004. We're there, you know, he was a legitimate war hero on the front lines, and they got some people to say, oh, he really was, you know, whatever they were saying about him in battle, and he was terrible to work for and all of this stuff, you know, and it was such a fabrication. Here, there is something that is a black mark on her record to some degree, but it's got to be put into the context of her entire record.
You know, whenever I think back to the Swift Boat thing, though, I think of how that became such an object lesson for politicians in the future, because John Kerry saw these allegations come out in an ad buy, basically. It was an ad that was run against him, not a lot of money spent against it, and he decided not to respond to it because he thought that as a presidential candidate to stoop down to answering things like this that were false, you know, would really kind of make him seem small. And he learned the hard way that in this media environment, in this internet and 24-hour news environment, you've got to swing back at everything. And that is also, by the way, I really do recommend people read the story on Hillary Clinton by my colleague Phil Rucker today. She is already, at least on her behalf, her allies are putting together a counterpunch operation on everything.
Mark in Wing, New Jersey. You're on WNYC. Hi, Mark.
Hi, guys. Good morning. Yes, great show, Brian.
Thank you.
I just wanted to say, if it were you or I who closed the bridge, I mean, we would be waterboarded with, like, black helicopters and taken to Guantanamo. I don't see why Christie doesn't own up to it and say, all right, look, I'm going to get to the bottom of this. I'm going to prosecute. I'm going to find out who conducted this terrorist act. I mean, it's a national treasure, the George Washington Bridge, besides being, you know, a bridge to the biggest city in the, you know, in our country, in the world. I mean, really, it's the center of everything. Instead, he's like circling the wagons, and he's saying, "I don't know, you know, that I fired that person." You know, if you or I were involved, and we said, "No, we took care of that guy," we just fired him. I mean, it doesn't seem to be taking responsibility to get involved. Let's get down to the bottom of this. And he's just sort of like, "I didn't do it. I don't know anything," kind of thing. And it's a little upsetting for a governor.
Mark, thank you. Karen, I wonder if you parse the governor's statements or the governor's spokespeople's statement in the case of Hoboken, which I don't think he's commented on himself yet, as being very different. I think so far they're very different. So with respect to Bridgegate, he said very explicitly, I didn't know about this. And when I found out about it, I fired the people who were involved, or at least two of the people, I guess four of the people who were involved. And, you know, somebody was talking to me last night about The West Wing, the old show The West Wing, and that there used to be some storylines on there. Remember this, when aides to the president would do something that was clearly on behalf of his policy agenda, but was a little dirty pool, and they'd say, the president can't know about this, so that his fingerprints would never be on it. That maybe something like that happened with respect to the bridge. But you can't say the same thing about Hoboken, which, if the charge is true, and we don't know if it's true, he ordered the lieutenant governor to threaten the mayor of Hoboken, you know, unless they went forward on this development project. And so far, all they're doing is kind of attacking the messenger. Oh, MSNBC, the network that first she went on to make the charge, is biased against Christie, or things like that.
Yeah, again, we just don't know yet, but I do think that with two legislative investigations going on and the U.S. attorney looking into this, all of them with subpoena power, you know, if in fact there is something to this, it is certain that there, it seems certain at least, that there is going to be an email trail or, you know, something that is subpoenaable, if that is a word. That will get to the bottom of this. And also, you know, witnesses can be subpoenaed and offered immunity to testify as to what really happened.
Nancy in Fort Lee. You're on WNYC, Center of the Storm. Hi, Nancy.
Hi, Brian. I love your show.
Thank
and
you.
I listen all the time. And I just wanted to say I live in Fort Lee now, and I'm from Hoboken. And to me, it all comes down to the abuse of power. You know, historically, in every age and every small to large area of government, people who feel that they're in power abuse it. And the day of Bridgegate, I was trying to cross the street in Fort Lee for physical therapy with a cane, by the way. I couldn't get across the street. And I looked to the right, and there were cars back as far as the eye could see, which impeded the school buses. So there has to be a reason for this to happen and for people to be investigated. You know, where there's smoke, there's fire. And as far as Hoboken, I think that they thought that every Hoboken mayor had been corruptible. In my history of living there for 26 years, they all wound up arrested, practically every single one. And they thought she's just one more that can be either corrupted or intimidated. And I really have to admire her sticking out, you know, her reputation, possible lawsuits, possible civil suits to tell the truth. And I believe that why else would she say it?
At least,
my comment.
Nancy, thank you very much. At least she's saying what she's saying now. She didn't say it at the time. And Ivory in Suffolk County, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, how you doing? I have a quick question regarding Obama's comments the other day on the NSA mass, I guess, surveillance is what we would call it now. He made a comment about how, you know, Martin Luther King wouldn't be in the position he was in were it not for, you know, dissidents like Martin Luther King who were also under surveillance by their own government. And I was curious whether your guest thought that that was implying a change in posture towards the Edward Snowden leaks altogether or just, you know, political posturing.
Karen?
You know, there was a long interview with the president that was published in The New Yorker over the weekend, and he was asked about the possibility of some kind of immunity deal or some kind of deal for Snowden, and he basically just dodged the question. But, you know, I certainly don't get the sense that the White House is moving forward in that regard.
And I thought we heard on the Sunday shows yesterday members of both parties. Now, granted, there are different wings in each party, but Dianne Feinstein, the Democrat, obviously the House Intelligence Committee chairman, Mike Rogers, who's a Republican. But, you know, Chuck Schumer has taken this position, too. There is not a lot of appetite that I can see. You're much closer to it than I am in Washington for giving Snowden a pardon or a plea deal, at least in official Washington, largely because this was not the only thing he revealed. If he just revealed the NSA metadata program and the related things and said, here it is, folks, I'm sorry to cause this much trouble, but I've got to do it, I'm a patriot, and left it at that, it would be one thing. But then he revealed all these spying operations on other countries, and there's, you know, some suspicion of him possibly having more of a relationship with the Russian government than just having asylum there. But even if that's not true, he did release other things that had to do with U.S. spying on other countries. Now, he can say that that's a principled stand, too, because some of that he considered over the top, too. But I think it really changes the script on him and changes the context from a national politics perspective.
Yeah, and like I said, I just am not seeing any appetite for that, as you said, among official Washington at this point. What is happening, though, is that, you know, this is taking just an extraordinary amount of the energy and focus in the White House, not just sort of dealing with the specifics of each allegation, but, you know, also dealing with the degree to which this whole thing has affected our relationships with some of our key allies like Angela Merkel.
You know what I wanted to ask you about that, and we're almost out of time, but Obama in the speech on Friday referred to not spying anymore on heads of state who we're friendly with. And I thought, my goodness, does that mean the United States is going to have to come up with an official list of countries who are considered our allies and countries who are not, when really it's complicated with so many countries?
And also there's that, and there's also the question of, you know, what if the head of a government that we're friendly with gets on the phone with a head of a government that we're not? That has been known to happen.
As long as they're only two steps removed and not three steps removed.
So, I mean, I think there are just a lot of questions out there as to how the sort of the practicalities of how these initiatives would be implemented.
Are they going to publish a with us or against us list?
I doubt that. I doubt that. And again, with us and against us does tend to shift from issue to issue and from year to year.
And it's supposed to sound more like George W. Bush than Barack Obama. By the way, what happens in Washington on King Day? The holiday is about 30 years old now. Has the federal government developed any traditions?
You know, what happens here is, and I think across the country, is it's been designated a national day of service. And so I know that in the past, for instance, I have gone out with my kids to do stuff. That is, you know, there are certainly a lot of commemorations that go on around town. But I really do think that what Dr. King would like the best is the idea that people go out and try to do something for other people on this day.
Coming up a little later in the program, we will replay extended excerpts from our Martin Luther King celebration that I co-hosted yesterday at the Apollo Theater. We thank Karen Tumulty, national politics correspondent for The Washington Post. Karen, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
And coming up next, a tale of two campaign promises. De Blasio keeps the one on paid sick leave, but on saving Brooklyn hospitals, it's complicated. Stay with us.